Blog Talk Radio.
Five, four, three, two, one. The next voice you heard was the voice of Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam from Selma, Alabama. The beginning
Brother
of
Imam.
Religion means alive.
Brother Imam.
Yes, sir.
What's your topic for today?
The topic is business, second Sunday.
Okay, thank you. Billy, beloved audience, we greet you in a greeting of peace be unto you. And we thank Brother Imam Alfred for caring enough about us, about the faith-based human being, but more importantly, the human being in general, but without shying away from having a particular emphasis on the continuous struggle of African-American people. No doubt, general and humanitarian in his, but specific in his emphasis. Specific in his emphasis. The needs of a struggling African-American community. Understanding that it's in our very makeup to be like that ant, to reflect on that ant. And we're not trying to get religious, but seeing that we are basically, in at least in terms of numbers, a Christian nation, it's clear that Bible suggests that we study the ant, you sluggard, and be wise. Dearly beloved people, yesterday I went side of my house going to my car, and I saw three pieces of architecture, structures, that was geometrically and mathematically designed in such a proportionate and mathematical way. But those structures exist because the ants took care of business and got busy and created a buzz or nest of coordinated activity. Working together, building and constructing, reflecting beautiful industry. And I thought about our people, the African-American people. We have that same potential nature in us. And thanks be to God that we have a brother today calling our attention to the need for our people, but the human being in general, to study that ant and be wise and engage in industry. To not just be focusing in a narrow spiritual way on the ways of heaven, the divine level, but following the theme of the late Imam Muhammad when he said that we should be focused from dust to divine. The time is out for religious expression that just simply have us focus on the divine, on the spiritual, on the ethereal, upon this concrete earth, where we are duty bound to work together, not just work as an individual, but work together as a community, to go for self, to do for self. The lady ma'am said, I didn't give up nothing good that my father taught me. It's common knowledge now that the late Honorable Elijah Muhammad came to us maybe some 6-7 decades ago, admonishing us that we should learn to do for self, to work together like that ant, to establish our own businesses, to pool our resources, to establish banks, bakeries, retail outlets, international trade, import-export, not working alone, but working together like that ant. Being busy. We should be begging for money to keep our institutions open. Considering all the dollars that come through our hands as a community, but maybe 1.5 times. Unlike other ethnic groups that's under that industry of that ant, they constantly flip that money over in their community. We can talk all that spiritual talk we want to. We can be all refined in the esoteric pearls and gems from the heavens on high. But if we don't have sense enough to go to our people and tell them, get busy, build your nest of financial, commercial, and economic prosperity, then we need to go somewhere and sit down. We're not qualified to lead our people. Oh, but brother, you come all the time with that current event stuff. But when I'm not on the air, I'm out there getting busy, trying to organize people so that we all can get some money in our pocket to get our share of this material world. And I'm not really exploring my law degree to get individual wealth. I could do that, but I study that end. We need collective financial, economic, and commercial dignity as a people. We need to do for self collectively. So anytime you catch me get involved with some economic activity, it's going to be group oriented. Because I studied that ant. I studied that ant yesterday. Working together, building a viable collective animal community, insect community. Believe me, I love scripture. I'm rooted in scripture. But I take the stand right now. If we went and got miseducation of the Negro by a great, practical, concrete-minded, non-heavenly-oriented Carter G. Woodson, book published in the same year at the birth of Imam Walter D. Muhammad. If we went and took that book, closed down all the other institutional books, start off with that book, Miseducation of the Negro. Walk that book the way the prophet walked Quran. Believe me, we will see our collective material productivity increase manifold. But we have been miseducated to go into these educational institutions to receive information, come back and use it to get a job or develop a career. If a group of people, if the majority of them are career focused, they will always be in the rear. So here's, can I prove it? Here's a recent study came out. Many Hispanics are, many are not even educated. But large numbers of Hispanics are just like that aunt now. Even their women are engaged in entrepreneurship, small business and enterprise, working together, not just looking for a cheap political office. I know the game. Politics without economic backing, without an economic foundation, is practically useless. Anybody can go out and rouse up people to run down to the poll and vote. But look at these other ethnic groups. They not be as hot as we are politically, but all of them are laying an economic foundation. First, the Asians, the immigrant Africans, the immigrant Muslims. My son-in-law, who I'm in business with, recently flew out to L.A., sat by a Shiite Muslim female, and they talked for 2 hours, and all she was talking about was the collective strategies that they're using to help their group get a share of this material world. The rich man buy a franchise. Go and get a poor Indian. Put them over the franchise. Let them learn English and learn how to run the business for 3 years, and then cut it loose and give it to them. And we run around talking about what we make on our job. Well, we just like Joe, suffering and being checked by a paycheck from check to check on these jobs. Yes, there's going to always, I'm not imbalanced, going to be a portion of us who work jobs and suffer like Job with financial security. But if we had any collective wisdom, it's not too late to go for self, to get busy, to establish a collective financial, entrepreneurial, economic, commercial, and even global network. Doing for self. All the Bibles maybe need to be closed out. Maybe all the Qurans, if we're not going to do nothing with them, need to be closed out. Maybe a brother need to be standing on every corner in the black community passing out miseducation of the Negro. Well, I don't believe in religion no more. You know, hey, later for that, I'm about getting my share of this work. Well, then you take this book, Miseducation of the Negro. It's been out there now for close to 80 plus years. You take it and use it and get busy. If you so wise, then you be like that app. You join together with your community. And you be industrious collectively. And you build an economy that lays the foundation for the perpetuation of African-American institutions for hundreds of years, thousands of years even. You out there talking about you making your dollar on a job. Well, a dollar is nothing but a collar. If all you doing is making a dollar, burning it up in consumption, and you're not investing that dollar, and I'm not talking about with the Jacobite-controlled stock market. I'm talking about investing it in yourself. See, in a vest, a kind of a garment, go and dress in your community up. with a collective tree that's full of green. Some real dollars, some going dollars, some turnover dollars. Well, brother, this is not normally the way you don't know how I teach. You don't know what strategy is being used. And why one conversation may have one kind of substantive content and another conversation may vary. I'm a student of Imam Waruthuddin Muhammad and a supporter. I'm a student, yes, of the late Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Even when I was not in the Nation of Islam, God blessed me the wisdom to see the need to do for self. To go for self. To work for self. To plan for self. To go for self. To live for self, to coordinate for self, to correlate for self, to plant seeds for self, to live for self, to die for self, to love self, to respect self, to not to be subordinate and dependent and slavishly looking for others to provide our material wants. Maybe the imam needs to emphasize business and economics every day. We run around here with a gun, all these guns. I remember the lady imam mommy saying one time, look, they ought to make a law where you can't have a gun if you don't have the knowledge to be industrious and to manufacture and to make a gun. Running around here all pea brain being violent with each other, but can't come together and pick up the tool of a shovel or a tractor to go out and work with each other and dig into this material earth. Farms all over the South feeding our people, getting a truck fleet, bringing these products up to our northern urban area, giving them the opportunity to eat to live. The Eat to Live was not just a nutritious book on nutrition. It was a book that gave rise to rampant and prolific possible economic activity. Where we going to get the food to eat to live? Well, we need to come together for self and follow the example that Elijah started in the 50s and the 60s, working together with large-scale farmland, being industrious, raising our own meat, our own fowl, our own crops. Don't be telling me about no salat when your neck stuck on high-ass falafel. I mean, high-ass falafel. You don't have no high-ass falafel in you. You're not concerned about no falafel, high-ass falafel, cultivating the community life. And not just cultivating it with your overly proud, spooky, spiritual, mystical signs that dazzle the masses, but cultivating it on a base level of that pyramid, down on that earth, digging in that earth, going for self, doing for self, working for self, helping self. It's been over 50 years since the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that. Why should we after 2015 be on the air preaching this hard about going for self? We need big money. You notice I didn't say I need big money. I said we need big money. We need collective wealth. They call the Jews the people of the book. But they have massive, colossal, collective wealth. They can dominate almost every avenue and outlet of economic and financial activities. For hundreds of years, they have structured a nest to get busy so they could produce economic, commercial, business, and financial life for their people. One of the first things that immigrants did in Medina was they started asking the people, yeah, we know your good heart want to help us. Thank you so much for that. But show me the marketplace. Let me get busy doing for self, going for self. I don't want your sandals on. My granddaddy out in that field, industrious, being industrious, he didn't have no sandals on. He had Brogans on. He didn't have no thobe on. He had dungarees on. He was ready to work. He wasn't ready to go to sleep in no church and in no masjid. He had something of that, but they did not have the collective wisdom to maximize the collective economy. But even though back then, African Americans had greater economic, business, and financial development, closer to slavery than we have now, the people. Go and dust off Booker T. Washington and his training at Tuskegee Institute. How he showed us how to use education in a practical manner. We don't need no outside contractors to build this school. We'll build it. Went around and got everyday African Americans. They made their bricks, they made their mortar, and they built that institution. Came down from the north and slept in peasants' homes, sharecroppers' homes. But he turned on their light of intelligence, and they went to work and physically built Tuskegee University with very little outside money initially. Well, brother, when you gonna bring in what happened this week, some current events? When you talk money, you're talking currency. Isn't that the word for money and economic assets, currency? And don't you hear me bend about our need to do for self? I'm steadily bending. Whatever sensible, civilized ethnic group does not have a base material earthly foundation up under them. And I'm not talking about a few entertainers and athletes that getting paid to blow money and to keep our minds locked up. Or exceptional individuals like Oprah, our fantastic entrepreneur out of Chicago. That's individual dignity. That's not collective economic and financial dignity. We're not going to follow the great wisdom of Quran and Bible pertaining to the need to get our share of this material world. Go and procure a copy of Carter G. Woodson's Miseducation of the Negro. Go and study the early history of Tuskegee University and our great leader who was not an Uncle Tom. That T doesn't stand for Tom in his name. It stands for towering. Titan. They didn't call him the Wizard of Tuskegee for nothing. Dearly beloved audience, this has been an introduction to our Imam. You're making no bones about it. Don't constrain him to just a priestly garb. You got to give him a garb, give him a human garb that encompasses all the aspects of the excellent nature of Adam, the spiritual Adam as well as the industrial Adam. Open up your minds and your hearts and be receptive to what this excellent human being is getting ready to bring us today. I've said enough, so let me decrease while our good brother increase. Imam Afrid Muhammad, we're waiting and we call upon you to lighten this topic today, to bring greater light and elucidation to the matter, to elaborate and to bring us in the correct focus about our obligation as an ethnicity. Imam Afrid Muhammad.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Live. I thank my honorable and noble brother, Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam, for those wonderful, marvelous remarks. We've had sufficient meal if he said nothing, if nothing else is said, just to mention Booker D. Washington and the great Carter Goodwin Woodson, who incidentally is from my paternal home county of Buckingham, Dilwyn to be exact. My family, the slave name plantation Bookers, grew up with the Woodsons. So I'm honored that my paternal home is being honored and mentioning Carter Goodwin Woodson, Dr. Carter G. Woodson. I also would like to, before I get into my talk, lecture really, I don't have a talk. We're tired of us talking, time for us to start having lectures and addresses. And Imam Yusuf Salam has addressed us. And you didn't have a fool addressing you. You had a board certified, admitted member of the bar of Alabama and elsewhere, speaking with you, an imam, qualified law professor, legislator. We need to know that. We need to know that we have a train that is going to the destiny. On that train and in the first car, men like Andre Carson, men like Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam, and right there in the middle car, men like Alfred Y. Muhammad, the president, vice president of his class, 2016 at Union Catholic High School. Not a small feat. And I also have to note that he will be my co-guest. He and I will be the guests on American Muslim 360, headed by Instructor Benjamin Bilal. Tune in at 213-816-0356. Second announcement, I want you to know that on the first Sunday, the 6th, I will be at the Mosque's headquarters for the first Sunday. And my topic, you know, you heard about Black Lives Matter. Well, my lecture would be a new you, a new people, new powerful individuals prepared for the 2016 and beyond in honor of the 16th century. 2016, and now we're in the 16th century. That Dr. John Hope Franklin said we would have to start with. So we're going to talk about a new you, how we're going to throw off the slave mind. I don't want to give up too much of my topic. And the rest of it is a new people. Why Black Lives Matter. So I'm going to see you at 929 West 171st Street, East Hazelcrest, Illinois, Sunday the 6th. I might even, with your support and your donations, you can send your donation to Imam Alfred at PayPal, because it costs money to go to Chicago. It's not free. I don't think the airlines are giving out any free tickets yet. We have to finance. We were just out of Warner Robins, Georgia. We spoke down there last week. We were the guest Imam Eddie Abdul Aziz Muhammad at the Educational Business Conference. Religion means alive and on the move. We're not on the groove anymore. We're off the groove. We're on the move. We're on the move for educational advancement, economic advancement, cultural advancement, governmental advancement. I suspect within the next 8 years, who knows, maybe the next 4 years, see us run a bona fide 1,000% Muslim African American for the president of these United States of America. Yes, it's going to come. It's our turn to lead America. America's ready for us. I'm going to turn you over to the hands of Alfred Y. Muhammad, who will take you further in the program, and I will return to finish up the rest of this podcast.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. As my dad elegantly introduced me on to Religion Means Alive, as he always does, I appreciate him doing that. I'm here to talk about this Sunday is business, and as always, I talk about business from a youth aspect, but I've noticed that, you know, I want to diverge away from that a little bit today and just talk about business in general, and just basically talk about a subsector of business, which is basically the business of takeover. Now, it may not sound like it has anything to do with business, but taking over and going into something and completely engulfing something has a lot to do with business, and I'll explain. Right now, we have an election going on. We have a huge election process going on. We have never seen an election like this ever. Never before have campaigns been put this so much money into their election process. You know, you see campaigns everywhere getting so much money from all these businesses, right? You have the Bushes, Jeb Bush. Whether you like him or not, whether you like his family or not, he is out there getting money and getting campaign donations, and he is putting in a lot of work to make sure that he is elected president of the United States. You have Ben Carson. Whether you like him or not, he's been going through a lot of trouble. I'll talk about that myself. He's been going through a lot of trouble, but he has been getting a lot of money. And you have, on the Democratic side, you have presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, the first woman who is actually really legitimately posing a threat as to become the first woman of first female president of the United States. She has a lot of campaign donations. And even you have Bernie Sanders, Vermont Senator Bernard Sanders, who has a lot of money himself, but he isn't into super PACs. He just takes straight campaign donations. But back to the whole super PAC thing. All these candidates that I mentioned, minus Bernie Sanders, because that's his thing. He does not do super PACs. All these people have super PACs. Now, what does that tell you about the election process and where it's headed? Well, for one, I'm pretty sure the founders never wanted the election process to ever be like this ever. I mean, I agree with Senator Bernie Sanders where he says that the whole Citizens United thing is a bit of a sham, but, I mean, that's the way things are headed right now, and unfortunately, you have to raise a lot of money in order to keep your campaign going. You got to, create ads, all that, this, that, and a third. So what does that tell you about business? Well, one, it tells you that business is now more important than ever in the United States of America. It tells you that these politicians, whether you like them or not, they have their opinions. They say stuff, whether they be outlandish, conservative, moderate, progressive, whatever. They are influenced by the people that are putting them in office. Is it supposed to be like that? No, it's not. But that is the way we are headed right now. So now more than ever, it is paramount for African Americans in this country to get a foothold in business. It doesn't have to be at the large level. That is incredibly important. But it starts at the small level, at the small business level. It starts in your local neighborhoods. It starts with buying from your local bakery or your local whatever it is, you know, even if the person is selling fried chicken, buy from him as opposed to the other person if you want to support African American business, because that is what the other people in this country do, and that is how they work their way up through the ladder. Now back to the businesses and how they influence campaigns. Now, you know, these super PACs, they are getting millions and millions of dollars funded, you know, blown into, you know, their whatever politician has that super PAC. So, you know, you have the Koch brothers who used to fund, I believe it was Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. Well, he dropped out, and now they put their money into current Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who's missed 47% of his votes, by the way, but that doesn't matter. He is getting all his money put in by, I believe, the Koch brothers and many other conservative, neoconservative groups. So it is important for African Americans to take over. It's nothing wrong with taking over and using your money and getting together to influence something. That is how things work in this country. And if you are ever going to be successful, unfortunately and fortunately, you have to do that. Now, we can, and you know, and I always bring it back to this. You know, you can protest. There's nothing wrong with protesting. Sometimes you have to, you know, be a bit of an activist. There's nothing wrong with being an activist. There's nothing wrong with stating your opinion. That is what this country is all about. You know, freedom of the press. It's the First Amendment. But at the same time, sometimes you have to hurt people. If you want to ever make a statement, you have to get people where it hurts. This is the importance of business. You have to hurt them where it really hurts. And where does that really hurt? In their pockets. That's where you get somebody, in their pockets. During the civil rights movement, we saw real action, real actual movement during the civil rights movement. We saw real action when the Montgomery bus boycotts happened. Where did they really get them? They got those people in their pockets. Yeah, they protested. Yeah, they were outside with picket fences, you know, getting sprayed with hoses, et cetera. It was a mess. And in the end, they came through on top. But where did they really get those people? They got those people in their pockets. They said, hey, look, I don't care how you guys feel about racism. My business is struggling, and I refuse to let that happen. So what did they do? They desegregated the buses. They didn't want to do it. They didn't care if they wanted to do it or not. The point is, it was hurting them in their pockets. And that is the way, that's what everything in life. If you want to really harm someone or you want to really make a statement, especially if you want to make a change in this country, you have to really get someone where it really hurts. And it's not an emotional thing. Many times it's not even a racial thing. It's all about really what can you do for them and what can they do for you. And in this case, they got them in their pockets, and from a monetary aspect, and that's how they got to do what they wanted to do. So that is a business of takeover. That is what we have to do. That all stems back to really the almighty dollar. You know, so that's just what I believe African Americans have to do if they ever want to make statements, if they ever want to do big things. We have to start off at the small level, the the small business level and work our way up. Because you can't, a business never started off anywhere. A business never started off just being big out of the blue. It didn't just blow up. I mean, there are a lot of companies, there are a couple companies out there that did it. But Amazon started in somebody's living room, I believe. Jeff Bezos, you know, started that thing in his living room. And Amazon, look at Amazon right now. Amazon is absolutely huge, okay? It is nothing to mess with at all. In fact, Walmart, who is Amazon's number one competitor right now, is right now behind. They have to get their website and everything. But that's besides the point. Amazon started off in a living room with Jeff Bezos. He took a lot of risky things. But at the end of the day, he got it together. And he created this big, huge shopping conglomerate at Amazon. So it starts off with supporting our small businesses. I believe I had an example of this. I had an example of this earlier, where it was my brother and I. It was a fall day around this time, I believe, last year when I was a junior in high school. I'm a senior now, if you guys didn't know. And I was getting ready to go to Dunkin' Donuts, and so my brother said, "Hey, you know, Mr. Lee's a black-owned business, has opened up down the street." So I was like, "Okay, all right, like, you know, whatever, like, Dunkin' Donuts is closed, I don't care, like, I'm still going to go to Dunkin' Donuts." My brother was like, "Yo, like, you know, like, it's nothing wrong with taking your business to a black-owned place." And speaking of business, my brother is a business mogul, you know, in his own world, and even in my world, you know, my brother is so into business, it's not even funny. When he was younger, he wanted a go-kart. We saw a go-kart in Toys R Us, right? So he didn't beg and this is an example. I believe this should be an example for all who want to start their own business and who want to get something with their business. So my brother, and then I'm going to bring it back to Mr. Lee's in a minute. So my brother, you know, he wanted a go-kart. So what did he do? He didn't beg my mother for it. He asked my mother instead to invest in an icy stand. Okay, he knew it was hot. At the time, it was hot. And what my brother wanted to do is he wanted to get a go-kart. So my mom was like, "Look, I'm not buying you a go-kart, okay?" But he wanted to get a go-kart. So he saved up, and he got an icy stand. And he had so many people buying from him. He made $150 within, like, 3 weeks. And he bought the go-kart, right? No questions asked, without any help. I think the only thing my mom had to donate was like $20 plus tax or something like that. And she had to take out like some insurance, right? Like, you know, fill out something for insurance. But that was it. And that, I believe that should be a prime example of how we should invest in each other's things. And bringing it back to Mr. Lee's, so long story short, and on another example, we ended up going to Mr. Lee's because it was a black-owned business, and guess what? The food was better than Dunkin' Donuts. So it is important for us to, it is nothing wrong, if somebody tells you, "Listen, you know, I didn't know race fed was a thing that had to do with it." It's not a racial thing. It's nothing wrong with supporting somebody who looks like you or supporting somebody, you know, who you are alike with. You know, James Madison, because I'm reading the Federalist Papers, James Madison said that people who come together have a like share, a like minds. Now, when he said this, he was referring to the need to not have parties, you know, and our parties were wrong. But this is something totally different. In this case, this has to do with business. All the time we see, you know, certain people out here who share a like mind and they support their business. And my brother, right, in this case was no different. He told me to go walk a couple of blocks, which was really no different from Dunkin' Donuts. I was just being lazy. He told me to walk a couple of blocks and support Mr. Lee's, and the food ended up being better. So that is a prime example of, in my life, you know, how business is important and how we should support our own business. And that is, and in the end, that I stem it back to the word takeover. I should rephrase takeover. I can't figure out the word because takeover sounds too crazy. A lot of people don't want to hear takeover, but I guess the real word should be teamwork. Teamwork is the word. And I believe if we ever really want to make an impact on this country, we have to realize the importance of business. And not business with fast money, business with slow, righteous money. Because fast money, in the end, gets you nowhere. And we see it all the time where African-Americans want to, I got to go and make a quick buck. And then, look, how are you going to make a quick buck? You're going to drug deal, and then eventually you're going to get caught, and you're going to end up in the prison system, which is something that you don't ever want to get involved with. You don't want to be in the system, period. And so at the end of the day, you have to do it the right way. And when you do it the right way, I believe that God rewards you with even greater things. That's just my opinion. So that is the business of takeover / teamwork. And I'm going to bring it back to I'm going to talk about another thing, too, that African-Americans have to get into. And this is a subset of business itself, and that's the media. You know, African-Americans, we have our own media stations. We have TV One. I mean, what's another one? We have Centric. But all these current channels have been bought off. I mean, which is nothing wrong with that. That's business, from what I understand. Companies get bought off all the time. But what we have to do is make sure that our businesses are strong, not only in the media but in real life. We have to strengthen our businesses and make sure that they cannot be infiltrated, because corporate espionage is real. Corporate espionage happens all the time. We have to make sure that our businesses are strong internally and in the boardroom. Once we get to high levels, we have to make sure that we are able to work together. And so back to the media now. I diverged a little bit. But back to media now. Another thing is that currently in the media, we have people like, you know, Hillary Clinton and Ben Carson. Hillary right now is feeling the good effects of the media, while our friend Ben Carson is feeling the negative effects of the media. You know, unfortunately for him, you know, it doesn't make me any difference. But he is feeling the negative effects. Now, you may think, a lot of people do think that this stuff is by accident. It's just randomly cropped out of nowhere. For some reason, you know, the media, you know, Ben Carson did something wrong for the media to go at him, and Hillary did something right for the media to go at him. Listen, it's never that. Nothing done in the real world, especially from a media aspect, is ever really done by accident. It's done from a business aspect. You got to understand, a lot of these channels have businesses, and a lot of these channels endorse these candidates. Now, in the case of Hillary Clinton, Hillary has ran before. She's ran for United States Senate. She was Secretary of State, and now she is running for President of the United States. As I said before, the first real potential threat to become the first woman female president, which is a good thing. So Hillary is feeling the good effects of it right now. But at the same time, a lot of these channels out here might have a certain bias toward Hillary, and that's because Hillary might share the same ideals as her channel. And as I stated before, these channels themselves are a business, so they might donate to Hillary. So a lot of these channels, I don't know the way to phrase it. A lot of these channels are in cahoots. I'm not going to say directly with the candidates, but they share the same perspective as the candidates. So as a result, what are they going to do? They're not going to talk bad about the candidate that they like. No, they're going to talk good about the candidate that they like, and they're going to make the candidate look good to the people. And that is something that may seem a little bit shady, and in a way it is a little bit shady, but that is the way things work. And as I stated before, like with that James Madison quote, people who share a like minds tend to work together better. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, from that aspect, there is nothing wrong with that. And so that is when a person – so – whether it's candidate Hillary Clinton or not, a person will feel the positive effects of that. So these people work things out, and that is what another thing I think we have to get into. It's not a thing of emotional dislikes or likes. Does this person believe in what you believe in? Does this person share this certain belief? Okay, well, then work with him to achieve a common goal and make sure that you can get your foot in the door when things hit the fan. That is what's important. Now, bringing it back to, because I like to relate it to current news issues, current Republican candidate for president of the United States, Ben Carson, is feeling the negative effects of it. Now, he likes to, and a lot of Republican candidates like to cry out, I don't know where this is coming from, that the liberal media has a bias toward the conservative side of the world, and that, you know, most of the time that being a Republican Party. And so, I mean, whether you believe it's a bias or not, that's up to you to decide. But the fact of the matter is that President Ben Carson right now is being attacked. Now, I'm not going to say it stems directly or has to do with business, but clearly this stuff isn't just some random thing that came up. This is a blatant, not I wouldn't say, but in my eyes, blatant. This is an attack on Ben Carson as a person. And unfortunately for Mr. Carson, he does not know how to dish it out, and it could affect his campaign severely. So that is what I have to say about business and the media, how the media can play a part in affecting a person's image. And bringing it back to us as African-American people, I just used Ben Carson and Hillary Clinton as an example. The media has had an effect on us, our image as a people, and it has had, and from a Muslim aspect, it has had an effect on us as Muslims as well. So getting our foot in the from the business aspect in the media, I believe, should be addressed as well and should be important, and we should stand up and say something about that. So that also has to do with the science or the science regarding business and takeover. And that is what I believe is important, and we should really get our foot in the door with that. So I believe I brought it full circle, addressing business and the media and owning certain things and really starting off from the small biz level. So in closing, I want to say this. It is important for African Americans to do a number of things regarding business. I started off internally a couple of weeks ago, but from the outside, we have to do this regarding businesses. The first thing we have to do is we have to work our way up. Nothing was ever started, especially regarding business. Nothing just blew up out of nowhere and all of a sudden, you know, a business is huge like Amazon or Walmart. A lot of businesses started off like mom and pop shops, but they didn't get business. A business never survives unless people contribute to it. So we have to contribute to our businesses. Once our businesses, you know, businesses get huge and they prosper tremendously, we have to make sure that we strengthen our businesses and that our businesses maintain themselves and that they don't just get dilapidated. And also we have to make sure that we work together. That may seem internal, which it is, but we have to make sure that we are able to work together as a people. And second, which has something to do, totally different with business, they all really connect in the end, is the media. And if we ever want to get our foothold in the door with the media and improving our image, we have to make sure that we get in the media and, you know, make sure we have our people out there doing what they have to do to make us look good. Because from what I understand, you know, coming from a person in the Imam W.D. Muhammad's community, I believe that what we are doing is right, and there's nothing wrong with what we are doing. But talking about African Americans as a whole, we need to make sure that our image, you know, is improved. So I'm just going to close it out, and in the end, give it to Imam Alfred Muhammad. And there you go.
Thank you, Alfred Y. Muhammad. Don't forget tonight to tune in to Brother Ben Bilal's program tonight. It will be at 213-816-0356. We're going to be discussing the upcoming first Sunday. We are going to discuss our relationship to mosques. We're also going to discuss the past conventions. We have a lot to talk about tonight on Brother Instructor Benjamin Bilal program. Dear beloved people, as we continue this broadcast for today, we are discussing business. I think we have enough tick-off points. And I would like to spend some time, since we are in the political season. People seem to not be going to New Hampshire for the beautiful foliage, are going to Iowa for the great country fairs. They're going to offer, they're going to offer political solutions to the problems.
Oh, I'm back. Just 1 minute, Sue. I was, hold on just a minute.
So it was my hope that people were going to Iowa, they were going to New Hampshire for the express purpose of seeing the beauty of this beautiful United States of America, but that's not the case. Now, how does that relate to what's going on politically and economically? Let's tie these two together. Certainly, some of you have heard of the Citizens United, which allows corporations to give an unlimited amount of money to political candidates. Well, on the one hand, that could be bad. But everything that's in creation has the potential for good and the potential for bad, such as the Internet. It can be a net to entrap people, or it can be a net to enlighten people. Social media can be an anti-social media, or it could be a media where you can connect and create societies. And so it is for Citizens United. We have 40 million African Americans, 2.5 million or more African Americans who are members of Imam Waruddin Muhammad's community. That means if they are members of Imam Waruddin Muhammad's community, 90% they have a chance, there's a great chance, 90% chance, that they are informed as African American, as al-Islamic people, Islamic people, and that they are the most informed Islamic people on the face of the planet Earth. It also would mean that they have been enlightened about Scripture, because some of the people that are in Imam Muhammad's community are Christians. Not everybody in Imam Muhammad's community is Muslim. Some are Christian. They follow the biblical understanding of Imam Muhammad. So we then would have the next phase of Imam Muhammad's mission, which is the revitalization of African American people, or the creation of African Americans as a people. And thirdly, they would have a new view of America. The three A's: a new view of al-Islam, a new view of African America, or a new African, not a Bambara, not a Yoruba, not a Pulu, not a Akan, not a Fanta, not a Bambara, but a new African whose sensibilities is not the village, whose sensibility is not the tribe, whose sensibility is not the clan, but whose sensibility is from Africa, but who has now a global perspective. So if we then understand that, we then understand that America is a land of many ethnic groups. You have the Irish that comes to bring County Cork to America. You have the people that came to England, from England, Robert, that want a New England. You want those who came from Britain who say they want a New Britain. They have a place in Connecticut called New Britain, a place in Connecticut called New London, New Haven. They were thinking that they had a new world to bring the British government over to America. In fact, the American government is no more than a combination of the House of Commons and the House of Lords, the Senate
and the Congress and the President of the United States is the king, be it by popular vote. Or, some would say, by the permission of the permanent government. I'm not prepared to go and say the permanent government. I am prepared to say that as a new American, I can get my way to the table, but I have to have strong, strong, strong ethical fortitude, strong ethnic fortitude. That's why every time I turn on the TV for the nightly news, I do turn on the TV and watch Lester Holt's. That's why I have strong appetite for my own ethnicity, even sometimes when they're wrong. Why? Because of the fact that I can correct you if you're part of my group, because America is a land of groups. So I think we now understand what our mission is. God inspired people to say in the Bible, he will make all things new. So we are new Al-Islam, new Islam, new Africans, and new Americans. Now, I'm not in the America of white supremacy. I'm not in the America of the corrupt ideas of the founding fathers. I'm in the new America that allows me to be a successful businessman, that allows me to be a Muslim African-American and bring my nation right into America as its nation, which encompasses my nation. Now, anytime someone goes against that agreement, I will oppose them, but I also will correct them. And what I'm saying is our business people, I was just down in Warner Robins, Georgia. And in Warner Robins, Georgia, I participated in a great program called Business Education and Leadership Conference, headed by the imam, former imam of Lynchburg, Virginia, my hometown. There's no way I could turn down the former imam of Lynchburg, Virginia. That's why I started out in Islam. He invited me to come to Warner Robins, Georgia, and I came to Warner Robins, Georgia, and gave an address.
Mm-hmm.
I was amazed that in Warner Robins, Georgia, next to Warner Robins, I met the mayor of Port Valley, Georgia, African-American woman. And we had a marvelous time in Warner Robins, Georgia. We were at the Carl Benson. The hotel was located on Carl Benson Boulevard. Now, I have to tell you, Carl Benson was one of the worst white supremacist reactionary persons these United States have ever known. Now, let's talk about what we talk about, new Islam. And this is precisely what Imam Muhammad told Minister Malcolm. He told him that the only way out for the nation of Islam was to get an understanding of new Islam. Alex Haley, the ghostwriter, just like I believe that Dr. Carson had a ghostwriter. I don't believe Dr. Carson wrote that book. Most people don't write these autobiographies. No. Dr. Carson's not a writer. So the writer yeast up the Dr. Carson's book, The Gift of Hands, as Alex Haley yeast up Malcolm X's story, Minister Malcolm. Great story. There's nobody in this country knows the history of Malcolm better than I do, and I didn't know it. I didn't learn it by accident either. I learned it because I was prepared to come in his office. What office was that? The national spokesperson. That's what Minister Malcolm was. Who was your spokesperson first for? the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And later, he got somewhat confused, and he was going between Imam Wahfuddin Muhammad and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So I would not go in someone's office. And he was the founder of that office, even though there were ministers like Minister Sultan Muhammad, who was the natural spokesman. Minister Malcolm really built that office up more than anybody else to be a spokesman for what? The message that God had given us. You say, oh, what do you mean, Mr. the spokesman, what God had given us? The message that the Honorable Muhammad gave us was permitted by God, even though it wasn't ordered by God. Now, that's the difference. So it, nothing happened except by God's permission. And the message that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us that should stay with us was a message to wake us up, clean us up, and set us up for the teachings of Al-Islam, the teachings of New Africa, and the teachings of New America. And Brother Minister Malcolm represented that in transition, and he passed before he could go fully into that. So I wouldn't go into an office and work and be the person that's working to be the foremost spokesperson. Yes, I am, no question about it. I wouldn't take a job unless I want to be the top of the job. And I wouldn't take a job unless I studied the predecessors of the job. It would be wrong. It would be a dereliction of duties. It would be malpractice not to study those who've gone on before you. So I studied Brother Minister Malcolm. I studied his techniques. I studied his strategies. I studied his methodologies. I knew what to emphasize and what not to emphasize. And we should be able to trust each other. But we have opened doors. We're opening doors for Al-Islam. And the reason I say that is because now our message must be prepared for a renewed message of Al-Islam, for a renewed message of New Africa. We didn't sound like Jesse Jackson. We didn't sound like the Democratic Party. We shouldn't sound like the Republican Party. We should sound like New Africans. And in so doing, I want to make the connection to politics. The great Congressman Andre Carson said at the convention, August the 30th, in the great city outside of Chicago. Escaped me for the moment, the city where we had our convention, where we'll be again this year, 2016. He said, if 1 million African Muslims in the Imam Muhammad community gave $10, we could have a political action fund. That's what we need. We should be putting in candidates, support our platform. What is our platform? Brother Alfred Muhammad II said we should have a slogan, getting our fair share of America. We want our share. We got 13%. Let us get our share of telecommunications. Let us get our share of the food business. Let's get our share of the real estate shelter business. Let's get our share of the clothing business. And let us compete in America and in the globe for a global share. Let's take over our neighborhoods. Let's take over our homes. Let's take over our families. And let's get our men back in our homes. And let's make our fathers the hero in the home. Let's pull them up. Even though I don't support Dr. Carson for president, even though I think he's ill-equipped to be president, I still smell a rat. I know he's made mistakes. I know he's a mistaken man. I feel sorry for him. I'm praying for him. Because I'm not a saint. and none of us are. He's made a mistake, but I will say this about the man. He's still a part of a larger strategy to knock Ham down, to knock the African-American male down. We see it with Bill Cosby. We see it with Herman Cain. Yes, we have to understand they would build you up, but they would never run me for president of the United States. I know I couldn't stand the test. So I wouldn't allow myself to be put up to the scrutiny of the president of the United States every day of your life. President Obama ran for office very wisely. He pulled every skeleton out of his closet with two books. He said, yes, I smoke reefer. Yes, I sip cocaine. I didn't do her wrong. So when they went to get his whole background, they already had it. Let's understand that. Understand that we are in vicious competition for our share of America. It's not going to be easy. People going to say things about you. Get in the fight and struggle. As God said, Lakad Kalakan and Sana, the Asanin Tukwin. He's created you the best of all. But he also said, Lakad Kalakan and Sana, the Kabit. He had created you in an intense struggle. And don't expect to get into the battle and not get slugged. And that is a slug match. And this is one of the ugliest campaigns I've seen since the 1952 campaign between Allied Stevenson and President Eisenhower. Ugly. But America's getting weaker and weaker. And it's time for new leadership to come on the stage. And I believe it's time for the people on the slave quarters to step up on the stage. And I'm not a political figure. But if I were a political figure and had prepared myself for politics, I prepared myself for religion. I prepared myself to engage in religious representation. And I have prepared myself to compete with Joel Osteen, to compete with T.D. Jakes, to compete with Billy Graham, Franklin Graham, and others. Even to compete and cooperate with those, even those who said bad things about, I want to go to evangelical colleges and speak to them. And I believe that with the 400 years of history, which gives me a bachelor's degree, a reconstruction degree that showed that we have mastered it, and a doctorate that we have survived a worst form of human treatment, we are qualified to be the doctors. Well, heal America. A doctor. They ask the question, is there a doctor in the house? The answer comes back resoundingly so. Yes, there's a doctor in the house, a doctor that can heal America's educational malaise, a doctor that can heal her economic inequality, a doctor that can heal her cultural drainage, a doctor that can heal her political intoxication. Yes, there's a doctor in the house. But you have to follow the prescription. And that prescription has been laid down by Imam Wahabuddin Muhammad. And if we lift him up, and not ourselves, not our own personality, not our own full beliefs, but understand through struggle with each other, with discussion, vigorous debates, privately, dialectical debates with each other, come out with the best strategies, the best techniques, and let's go to the American people and present Imam Muhammad's plan. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, take the Muslim program to Congress. And we see that one of our congressmen have already taken the program to Congress. Let's take it to the American people. Let's show in the African-American people. Let's go to the African-American people and present our plan. And do what Alfred Y. Muhammad said. Let us develop business life among us. Let us buy from each other. Huh? Let us do what Dr. King said. Let's have an insurance in. Let's make North Carolina Mutual Insurance Company the largest insurance company in America by our support. Let's build our African-American insurance companies up. Let's build our banks up. That's what we need to do, Brother Minister Louis Farrakhan.
John Imam Alfred in religion means alive and mosque cares, and let's have a bank-in. Join us, Minister Louis Farrakhan, and let's have a buy-in. Let's put our men to work. 6,000 men and women are coming out of jail this week. Where are our jobs at? Huh? Who will give them a job coming out of the federal prison? Where are we going to give them a job? Huh? But let's first get more mind, and let's open up the business of survival institutes. Let's teach them how to be fathers. Let's teach them how to be sons. Let's teach them how to be good boys and grow up in schools and claim that scientific role, claim that business role, claim that educational role, claim that cultural role, claim that role as leaders in America and leaders in the globe. Let us build strong, powerful child interest committees. So powerful that we'll be able to reformulate. We'll have our young men graduating from high school at 16 years of age. Let's do that. Let's have them starting out as entrepreneurs at the age of 8 and 9. I never put a great emphasis on business in my home, but my son was seen. I saw a proclivity in Joseph Muhammad. He had a proclivity to being a businessman, and I developed it and I encouraged him. I didn't encourage him to be an artist because I wanted to be an artist. I didn't encourage him to be a writer because I didn't want to be a writer. Bob may want to be a writer. I didn't encourage Alfred to be a doctor because I wanted to be a doctor. I encouraged him to be what he was, what he is, a natural politician, a natural statesman, a natural leader that God has put into him. And I kept them away from all the bad forces of society that will put weeds in the garden. I fertilized the garden. I fertilized the motivation. And I intend to go around these United States of America and foster Charles S. Johnson. I'm glad to see his grandson on TV as the Secretary of Homeland Security, the great sociologist Charles S. Johnson. His name is Jay Johnson, but his grandfather, Charles S. Johnson, this university sociologist, and Shadow the Plantation. I want to encourage that we have E. Franklin Frazier. I'm going to encourage the W.E.B. Du Boises. I'm going to encourage the George Washington Carvers. I'm going to encourage educators. Let us baptize our people in their potential. Let us baptize our people in a new spirit, a new will. And let us go and find the A.G. Gastons. Let us find the Murray McLeod Bethune. Let us find the great Ace Spalding. Let us find them and build them and nurture them. Paul Rivers went out from the garden and Cain became gray heads. We have our people. They have to go and listen to Joel Osteen to be motivated. Let us motivate our psychologists to open up great medical practices. We need psychotherapy. That's millions of dollars to be made with those who have psychological degrees so we can heal the effects of slavery. Let us go to work and build more psychologists. Let's build that young boy to stand on the corner right now looking for something, but he has great insight. Let's feed him. Let's feed his spirit. Let's feed his will. Let's feed that mother to be so she can produce great scientific mind. Let's feed that father so he can further great scientific mind. Let us feed us so we can develop a business life. The next thing you have once you come on the earth is a need for the material world. We are material, we are spiritual beings in a material world. And the spirit comes into the body. And in fact, our religion tells us this by the Kaaba. We walk around the Kaaba, what, 7 times, a circle, meaning that the spiritual life, the circle represents the spirit, that the spirit has to govern the material life. And therefore, we're going to push hard for a strong material life, a strong showing. Imam Muhammad said, our masjid should be small. Our education school should be bigger. And our business life should be bigger than that. That's what we need. We need a presence, a power. powerful business presence, a powerful entertainment presence. Well, we own the entertainment. Huh? Jay-Z is one of the biggest entertainers on earth, but he's owned by others. Michael Jordan, one of the greatest basketball players ever walked the earth, he now begins to own. Let us change our picture. Let's present our picture, and America and the world will bow down to us and say that God has spoken to a people and let them lead us back to life. I close it out by presenting to you Alfred Y. Muhammad, who will close the broadcast out. Take it away.
All right. Unfortunately, the burden of closing out the show has been put on me, but I gladly accept. So without further ado, I'm going to close this episode of Religion Means Alive. You can tune into the show tomorrow at 7 o'clock for another edition of Religion Means Alive.
First Sunday and also about First Sunday and Savior's Day.
Okay, when's it?
So remember, February the 20th at the Robert Creek Hotel in Newark, New Jersey, we're going to have the Savior's Day. We are still in the business of saving our people. We're still in the business of thanking Almighty God for his great blessing which he has bestowed upon him. So we will see you, in Hazelcrest, Illinois, December the 5th, December the 6th, at the Mosque Airs headquarters. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. Your blessing once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive.